The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect those of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.
And we're back here on Analyze This. Before I get back into part two of my conversation with the one only Malik Siku, some programming notes for tonight on Channel 12. The flagship, the PBS NewsHour from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. Finding Your Roots from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. Explore the deep family mysteries of comedians Carol Burnett and Niecy Nash. Okay, that's from 8 to 9. And then American Experience from 9 to 10. Explore the lives of three people who work together to fight against cervical cancer. That's American Experience from 9 to 10. The Invisible Shield from 10 to 11. Discover how public health has doubled life expectancy, but the system is now in jeopardy. That's from 10 to 11. And then I'm Important Company from 11 to midnight because time has now turned forward. Okay, so NewsHour at 7, Finding Your Roots at 8, American Experience at 9, The Invisible Shield at 10, and I'm Important Company at 11. Once again, I'm fortunate, I'm honored to have on my show Professor Malik Siku, a historian par excellence. And before we get back to Via History, Malik, I know the historian that you are, one thing we learned, or at least I learned, is that the city of Baltimore, even though people tend to focus on Washington, Philly, New York, and Boston on the eastern seaboard as it relates to our early history, Baltimore was equally, maybe even more important than some of them early on, right?
Of course. Well, one reason is, you know, I think when we talk about the triangular trade or transatlantic trade system, by definition, it was a mercantilist. That means a government-controlled commercial system.
Mm-hmm.
Unified Europe, the Caribbean, and North America. So that from the 1620s up until maybe the 1820s, for 200 years, whether we like it or not, people of African origin were forced to leave Africa and literally, you know, engage in an island hopping situation or in the U.S. mainland. So many European imperial powers had a base in Europe, outpost in the Caribbean, and a next outpost in North America. And because the 13 colonies were British, well, we were tied. And even in the Danish era, the Danish West Indies were tied to British trade. That's why Alexander Hamilton would, although he was born in Nevis, raised in St. Croix, he ended up in New York because we were tied together.
Correct. And the city of Baltimore is hurting now because the Francis Scott Key Bridge collapsed this morning. A foreign cargo ship out of Singapore ran into the bridge, and parts of the bridge collapsed. So our sympathies goes out to those who may have family and friends, and for those who are struggling right now to deal with that reality. And the reason why I bring it up is because a lot of Virgin Islands went to school in Baltimore. Malik Siku, Morgan State University, the history is rich with respect to Virgin Islands getting educated at a higher level in the Baltimore area.
Actually, my daughter lives in Maryland, so it touches. So those loss of life you're saying with this accident?
Or? Yeah. You had cars falling into water.
Oh, man.
Yeah, yeah, rough. Wow. Two people recovered two people so far, and, you know, it's ongoing as well, you know. So I got a loved one living in that area as well, so, you know. We got to keep an eye.
When I finish this call, I have to make a phone call.
Yeah, make that phone call. Yeah. I don't make mine already. Yeah. Matter of fact, make it during the break, the next break if you want, because we got a couple of minutes.
I might have to.
And
I'm calling Neville again. I disclaimer, we're in the same age group, but if you're 10 years older than me, I'll call you Mr. J.
64, the last of the baby boomers, my brother.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Last of the weekend.
We are who we are. Malik, one of the things that you mentioned, not in the last conversation, but when we first spoke, you had to educate me and let me know, Neville, when we got to self-governance in 1970, it wasn't just because they believed that we had earned the right to elect our own governor because they were appointing governors prior to. We had Virgin Islands who took a hard stance over the years that led to that, right?
I was using diplomatic language. We demanded, in fact, if we really have to do the discussion on our ancestors, Rachel Francis, who we revere today, he was one of the leading voices here in the Virgin, especially in St. Thomas, who was unequivocal, big word now, unequivocal and firm that we must govern ourselves now, not later.
Not when I are ready for we to do it. We go do it now.
And I want to say that, and we look at God with respect, but he would be equivalent to Garvey, Marcus Garvey had the same view in Jamaica. Garvey didn't demand independence in Jamaica first. He demanded autonomy and self-governance now. Let us govern ourselves now. Let us acquire the experience of running our own place. Let us have this experience today, not tomorrow, not in 100 years. So our ancestors are very clear that you have to have a culture of not just resistance, but also governance, self-governance, and good self-governance. So not just running the place as you feel like it. So the quest for an elected governor, elected legislators, our own courts, were already advocated in the early 1900s, even before the U.S. transfer. It started from before, and during the U.S. transfer, it picked up tempo because the founding fathers and founding mothers of the modern Virgin Islands looked to the United States and seen as the U.S. has a progressive tradition. It has also a reactionary tradition. Let us look at a progressive tradition in the States. Let's look at the U.S. Reconstruction era, because that's what it looked at. Look at Reconstruction and see how African people in America, African Americans, reconstructed the South.
That's right.
It wasn't just white people helping us. You know, we also helped ourselves.
That's right.
And so that pick up your bootstraps, pick up your own bootstrap mentality was something that all forefathers and foremothers were clear about. Now, how we implement it was where we differ now. The question now is, okay, once you agree on self-governance, the question is how to do it now. And so the desire to promote electing our own governor was neutral. And the state side, the federal side, they wanted us to be less dependent. And we wanted to be more self-governing. Mm-hmm. So 1968, with the Elected Governors Act, we finally had a breakthrough. And the last appointed governor was Melvin H. Evans. He was appointed in 69. And then on his watch had a series of, let's call it, landmark events. I mentioned the Great Flood that occurred in October 1970. But before that, there was an important case called Hosea versus Evans. I was a little boy we were little boys when it happened. I didn't understand the case. All I knew is that some of my classmates or schoolmates who were going to Gramboco, which was a school close to the Carib Gas Hotel, Carib Gas Company, the Carib Gas Company, there was a fire that impacted Gramboco School. So the Gramboco School was within the range of disaster, and that school had to be relocated to the west. And so it was that Hosea case that meant children from Eastern Caribbean parents had to be integrated into a public school, as well as the disaster of the gas fire that meant Gramboco School had to be closed. And then in the flood that occurred in October of 1970, this flood had a rainfall of 18 inches here in Bonfield, which is a flood. I mean, anything but 6 inches of water causes a flood, so 18 inches causes severe flooding. Now, for the benefit of those who might be in Bruno, Puerto Rico's situation, this flood had also hit Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico had 43 inches of rain. 18 people died in Puerto Rico, 34 were missing. The Richard Nixon administration declared a national emergency for Puerto Rico. So Puerto Rico, that hit hard. Culebra, St. Thomas, St. John. St. Croix had got a little touch up. St. Croix wasn't hit as hard as St. Thomas. St. Thomas had hit hard. And where I live in the West as a child, oh man, the greatest damage was in the West, in Bonfield and Current Terrace area. So that occurred. The then governor, appointed Governor Evans, was going through an election campaign of his own. And as I said last time, the lady who raised him in Cinchy and the neighborhood women demanded, hear the word, demanded that Evans build a new school. Now, long time ago, it's not like how it is today. In those days, when the parents demanded something, governors had to listen. If the parents told the governor he's got to build a school, he had to build a school. And so that disaster occurred in October. And then There was a fire in November. The Caribbean Gas fire was in November. And I'd finished, and in December had a plane accident. The Carib Air Airline. Everything was Caribbean. It was Carib Gas, Carib Air, Carib everything. So Carib Air had a plane accident right here by what's called Towers, where the plane overran the Harry Truman Airport. Because in those days, our present airport was one-fifth the size. It was
tiny. Yeah, the strip, the landing strip wasn't as...
It was tiny. And so with those four major events, the then governor who was running for election for the first elected governor's election in modern history, he had to contend with four issues, but the two greatest were the flood that hit and the fire. So mm-hmm. In fact, I read an article called A Baptism of Flood and Fire. I read that in the Daily News because he had a baptism of fire and a baptism of flood. And so Evans, in that infamous three-way election where it was Evans versus King versus Farrelly,
mm-hmm.
Evans won.
Yeah.
And when he won...
Ultimately, he went in a runoff because Farrelly lost. Farrelly was the loser in that three-way race, and then he beat King in a runoff.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, my Cousin Cousins... always remind me of the
By the way, right, that case you're referencing, right, Hosea versus Evans, right? Because it's not Hoosier, it's Hosea. You're absolutely correct,
Hosea,
right? Because it's only one O, ain't two O, right?
Yes,
right. It was Laverne Hosea, right? Yes. By her next friend and father, Alman Hosea, Ralston Freeland, Hyacinth Freeland, and Rand Joseph. By their next friend and mother, Mrs. Daphne de Vallard, on behalf of themselves, right, and plaintiffs, versus Dr. Melvin Evans, Philip Gerard, Commissioner of Education, so Frandel, your father named Dan this morning, Wilfred James, Deputy Commissioner of Education, my uncle, right, Vivian Andrews, Joseph Arbain, Gerard Christian, Thelma Dalmaida, Joseph Ahers, or Jurors, whichever you pronounce it, Irene McDonald, oh God, that's my partner, them aunt. Right, Mark. That's Mark Bigsdale. That's Mark. That's Mikey McDonald's mother. Right, and Rufus Martin, members of the VI Board of Education. So those are landmark cases. I reading it now. Yeah, man. Yeah. And they actually reference in the case. Right, the premise for the final decision was come out of Brown v. the Board of Education.
That's correct.
The Topeka case. Yeah, man.
In fact, we used in that project, Dr. Larry, Attorney Welcome, and I were on. For the Simplified Revised Organic Act of 1954 book, we use this landmark case as a definitive transformation of the Revised Organic Act, because what we saw in this case was a local court, though federal in district court sense, federal, but you had a local judge, Judge Christian, interpreting landmark federal case, Brown versus Board of Education,
correct.
But also applying the federal principles into the local situation in a meaningful and transformative way. So that once that case was won on behalf of the children of immigrants, it changed the Virgin Islands. The Virgin Islands changed completely. Why? Because we did not allow a de facto discriminatory system. Because there were some people in the Virgin Islands who wanted to maintain a
system. I don't
want to go there, you know.
No. Basically, what we're saying is the thing them that they complain about, there were those who want to keep practicing it. You know what I'm saying?
I know some elders. I mean, they're way older than us.
No. We love them to death, but with all due respect, we just calling a spade a spade.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And don't forget now, we don't want to leave out the fact that, and at that time, we were in the heart of a population expansion, maybe like never seen anywhere else in the world per capita, where population tripling in 20 years. I don't know of any other jurisdiction in the world that ever had a population tripling from 33 to 99,000 like we had between 1960 and 1980.
No place. And I must add that, you know, the big xenophobia, the fear of strangers always kicks in when your population changed by 10%. Our population changed by 200-300%. So
300.
Xenophobia.
300, my brother. 200% more, 300 in total. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Yes.
Wow.
So, So the xenophobia, right, that emerged wasn't because people just bad, you know. No. That's human beings.
That's what it is.
Not understanding.
That's what it is. Yeah.
A transformation. And so there was a period in the early 70s, we were little boys then, where many of the elders condemned immigrants. Did not like immigrants, and immigrants were our kith and kin, our brethren.
Yes, sir. And alas, for a good 20, 30 years beyond that.
That's correct.
You know what I'm saying? But by the way, one thing we like to do on this show, we like to educate the public. All you got to do, folks, is Google Hosier, Hosier, not Hoosier, with two O's, one O, Hosier v. Evans, and you'll see the case law there, law.justia.com, and you could go there and read it, and it's an excellent read, a lot of details. It actually speaks to how we go about determining our children going to school here in the Virgin Islands, and talk about those who graduate from high school before the age of 16, those who are 14 years of age or over, have been found by tests and examination to be incapable of profiting from instruction, a whole heap of technical stuff. But what it has shown, Malik, is that we have evolved as a people. We still need to be proud and feel good about ourselves, even though there are many areas where we've regressed, we've made significant strides.
I mean, I speak about this from the standpoint, not just as instructor, but we lived it. And, you know, the way my life has been, for better or for worse, I was placed in a situation where I saw the results of these decisions unfold in living color.
Yes, sir.
As a child, so yes, sir. I had a mind of a child. A child wouldn't fully understand the legalese of Jose or whatever. At that time, I didn't understand. All I do is I had classmates who came from Gamboko, who just came from St. Kitts, and the mother living here, and we had to quickly learn to adjust each other. And
yeah,
so I did not fully understand. All I know is that in current Terry School, it's all called Gladys Abraham.
Yeah.
Half of the students were from Gamboko, and they came just from neighboring islands, and within a marking period, we became friends. And then as time went on, I began to realize what took place. And as I became an adult, I look back and realize, what?
Yes, sir.
In a mere decade, this society had to come to terms with a shift in demographics so that even if the elders didn't want to change, they had to change. It was beyond their control.
What the one constant in life, man?
Change.
By the way, we're going to a break. I want you to know, right, that I go put on my professor hat and talk to you as a student now. Just know you use the term in living color. That's the Yankee term. That's a Yankee term, Malik. Donya, we don't say live and direct. Okay.
Yeah.
Chalice, the reggae band asked the question. You know what live and direct mean? It means live and direct. You know what I'm saying? So you saw it and lived it. Live and direct. We all did, because all of us from that era, you know what I mean? That's what we do. So we take a break, come back. We're going to talk a little bit about the gasoline excise tax case from the late 70s that went into the early 80s, which has undermined us and the federal government owe us significant money to this day right now. We'll be back with Malik Siku, part two of our VI history discussion here at Analyze This. Be back right after this.
Bank of St. Croix has something for everyone. With two locations, the Bank of St. Croix provides personal and business checking accounts, online banking, and mobile apps for banking on the go, a nonprofit community investment checking account, and a 24-hour banking cash management platform. Bank of St. Croix, Gallows Bay, Bank of St. Croix, Peters Rest, and online, bankofstcroix.com. For details about our nonprofit community investment checking account, our service specialists are ready to help. Bank of St. Croix, member FDIC.
Hi, I'm Peter Sagal. You spent the week listening to the news. Don't you think you deserve to show off what you've learned on Wait, we give you a chance to impress your friends with your knowledge of international incidents, political gaffes, and the latest advancement in German nudists. You'll be the life of the party, or the death. Either way, you'll make an impression, and you can thank Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Saturdays at 1 p.m. and Sundays at 2 p.m. right here on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
Ah, sometimes you need a moment to just step back, relax, and listen to your favorite song. I'm Raina Duris, and on the next World Cafe, maybe I can help you find something new to love, or maybe remind you of something you've been missing. There's so much music out there to enjoy, so take a moment, take a breath, and tune in to World Cafe.
Weekdays at 10 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1.
There are many complex issues that arise in our territory.
Comes with the Territory with Leslie Comision.
Join me, Leslie Comision, for a breakdown of political issues facing our territory, one conversation at a time. I'm here to be the voice you can rely on for information that is straightforward and comprehensive. Tune in to be a part of the discussion. It all comes with the Territory.
Comes with the Territory airs Sundays at 1 p.m. and re-airs at 7 p.m. on WTJX-TV, Channel 12.
And we're back here at Analyze This, and I got Malik Siku, professor, joining us this morning, Virgin Islander, historian par excellence, and this is our third discussion. We had one late last year, I think it was, and then I said when VI History Month come, Malik had to be on at least twice. So I want to thank you very much, professor, for making some time to join me and educate me and the audience as it relates to our history. Along with that William Davis thing this morning, man, that's big. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah,
I owe you a debt of gratitude for that. So we're in the early 70s. We had our first election for governor in 1970. Then we also had a very interesting case with, I think it was Molina versus Tadman, right? That dealt with the composition, right? And reapportionment and the composition of the legislature, right? Because back in the day, we used to get more at-large senators than district senators, right? So that particular case and the Molina-Tadman case, I believe it was, actually created the modern-day composition of the legislature, which is 7 St. Croix, 7 St. Thomas, St. John, and 1 from St. John that is at-large.
At-large.
Right? So we were actually, coming along, coming to come, like we just say.
That's
right?
That's
and then we had another election with the same three combatants in 74, King, Farrelly, and Evans. Evans was the incumbent, and he lost out, and then King won the runoff, and then Wang Louis, right? Ultimately took over for King because Cyril King passed away while he was in office. I think it was January 2nd or 3rd, 1978, thereabouts. That transition period that we talk about where our population tripled, we were going through a lot of different things at the same time, Ali.
Well, yeah, and again, you and I have the benefit of hindsight. We are not mature adults, but I cannot completely comprehend the kind of difficulty they went through, because if you do the history, that election in 1970 resulted in the first African-American, African-Caribbean elected governor since the Reconstruction.
Wow.
For almost 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
No part in the United States had allowed the election of an African-American. It was historic for the local, in a sense of for us in the U.S. Virgin Islands to elect our own governor was in and of itself great. But if you take the posture of the larger United States that we were a part of, it was the first time since the 1870s, that a person of clearly African ancestry won an election fair and square. Now, two appointed African-American governors in the Virgin Islands. Actually, three. William Hasty, Archie Alexander, and Walter Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
Three. But they were appointed. And then we had, of course, our own appointed, Cyril King appointed for a month as a transition. Then Evans for a year and a half, 2 years. And then Evans won outright.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to tell ourselves, right, that the Virgin Islands made history in every sense of the word history.
But we've been trendsetting. As a matter of fact, and by the way, for those who don't know, Cyril King actually had connections with Hubert Humphrey, I think it was, right?
That's correct.
The senator from Minnesota, right?
That's correct.
But we're also trendsetting the first territory to actually honor Martin Luther King, who was assassinated. We're going to use that term, right? In Memphis in 1968. And also, we've been leading, you know, we don't really love ourselves enough or give ourselves enough praises or flowers while we're alive. You know, we like to wait until down the road and look back and say, look what we look, comparatively speaking, and like you said, the big picture, look at what we did. Because let's face it, we had no idea, or some of us did, Hubert Harrison, right? When you look back at his influence on the Marcus Garveys of the world, people talk Marcus Garvey, but Hubert Harrison's the man. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it speaks for itself.
Elmer Wilmer Blyden,
that's right. That's, you know what I'm saying? Correct. Yeah, man. So we got so much to be proud of, and our history is so rich.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's like when I tease my partner them. When a man will put some domino in me, he'll tell me, Neville, this thing too rich for you, and stay out of this game. Stay out of this game. Then he told, I never hear it in that context before. You know, he said, this thing too rich. Stay out of this thing.
And I will start talking to him, and I ain't done with you because Ruby Rouse.
Oh, gosh.
Ruby Rouse, she was in this thing, you know.
That's right.
In the 60s, she was in the first Constitutional Convention.
Mm-hmm.
Then she ran with Farrelly.
Farrelly, yeah.
In 74. So, not just in terms of the African Caribbean or Black Caribbean, but even the women here were trendsetting. I would say, I keep quoting Pressure Boss Pike. He says, we are a people of great value. We stick together with a common shoe. I didn't say tambra, but common shoe. Common shoe. So I say to you, but the VA has had a strange contradiction that we are the tail of two cities. And one side of our political spectrum, there are those progressives fighting for changes. Other sectors don't quite want to change. So you had hinted before about the gassing excise tax.
That issue
exploded after the 1973 oil boycott. You know, the Arab countries were protesting the Israeli war, the Yom Kippur war.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, the price of petroleum went through the roof, and people started making money.
And it wasn't only that, or no? It was the what's his name, Stavros Niarchos and Aristotle Onassis, right? With them manipulating the transport of oil and 1 billion a big ship this year, and the next one said, "Well, I'm gonna build a bigger one next year." And we were impacted by that here, and that's why I keep telling people when we talk on the show, right? Even though we're a local show, right? We got to keep an eye on what's going on in the outer world. Because what's happening out there impacting the price of the cost of living, price of goods right here, supply chain issues impact everybody. So don't believe when we're talking about what's taking place with the conflict in the Middle East, or what may take it with the Ukrainian invasion, what they're talking about that far. We got other things don't have to worry about. No, them things that impacting us today.
That's correct.
You know, so we don't take that lightly.
But never it been so. I remind my students, back in the Danish era, when the Danes made St. Charlotte Amalie and St. Thomas an entrepot, a center for international trade, it made us a center of international politics.
That's right.
They say what we asked for. I wrote an article the other day, and some people say they like it, talking about how here was a haven for revolutionaries from the Dominican Republic and Haiti, and a lot of people say they're unaware of it. I say unaware because we don't teach it in history, but St. Thomas, Charles Amalie, and St. Thomas during the Danish era was a haven because people perceive here is a place where it's a neutral Danish kingdom, has a colony here, there's a natural port here, business is done here in St. Thomas. Let's cut deals in St. Thomas. So St. Thomas, and then once St. Croix became the base of Martin Marietta and Amrata Hess, two major conglomerates, established enclaves in St. Croix in the 1960s, St. Croix is a center of production. In fact, for a long time, Hovik was one of the top five refineries in the whole Western Hemisphere.
No. Top two. You are correct because it wasn't the top five. Number two is after five. You know what I'm saying? But it was actually higher than that. And at one point, could you imagine this number? 700,000 barrels a day capacity. Mm-hmm. Unheard of. On a small island down here in the Caribbean.
And I don't ever, the count, and you could spend dollars and count money. So the people who lived here, the adults, the mature people in the 70s, realized if Leon Hess is making billions, we need to make billions too. And there was a desire, and I believe the person responsible for that is former Judge Vaughn Hodge.
That's the man.
Then the AG.
That's the man. Win the case.
In fact, he said, we want to profit off of their profit.
Yeah, man.
Everybody eating lobster and steak and eggshell, and then we eat inside it and crack.
No, sir.
Sausage and eat inside.
No, sir. But I know one thing, though. When hurricane hit, them Vienna sausages and sardine taste good. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's correct.
But here's the greatness of that position that Vern Hatch took, right? Oh. He used a federal law that said anything manufactured here and transported into the U.S. pursuant to, I think it's U.S. Code 48 that established us, right? That said dollar for dollar, right? That money's supposed to come back to the Virgin Islands, right? That's the cover over for the rum, right? Yeah. It's the same principle, right? And the reality is they felt that that was too much money for people of color. I'm going to be very candid.
I'll take it a step further. You're right.
Go right ahead.
I'm going to use the right words. There was a political decision because Judge Hodge told me when he spoke years ago, he said that when it came down to the decision in the Third Circuit, the then attorney involved was Antonin Scalia.
Antonin Scalia, that's right.
Who eventually became a Supreme Court justice, and he is now deceased. So I'm going to talk too harsh about him. But he, in essence, said that there was a political decision that, and they didn't use it in blunt terms, but in essence, it meant that this was giving too much money to black people in the little island.
That's what's going on. Because the district court judge, Oliver Gash, took offense with the U.S. government's position that the way the law was written, we weren't supposed to be getting those custom duties and excise taxes back, right? And he ruled in our favor in October 78 for 400 mil. So we could just do on the surface math. If we were good for 400 million after 12 years and the refinery was in existence for another 34 years with greater production and a higher tax rate. Oh, gosh, Malik. Oh, gosh. They owe us in the billions. Ain't no doubt about that.
But I got some bad news for you.
Go right ahead.
I think we're in a jungle. Not jungle, man. This guy got into a jungle. I mean, we fell asleep. A jungle, man, you're starting mad. I believe when the time was right, in the late 70s, early 80s, when there was a window of opportunity to resolve it, the Virgin Islands political leadership dropped the issue.
They did. But also, you know what happened, right? Mm-hmm. The great judge that you were talking about moved from attorney general to the judge of the Superior Court.
That's correct.
So that variable. That's why they said timing is everything, right? Yes. Had he still been in that attorney general capacity, maybe we may have had a different outcome. You know, I'm not saying a guarantee, but things happen. And as a result of that, we may have missed an opportunity. But I still believe deep down inside, they really didn't want to give us that money. But here's the counter argument, Ali. If you're using that principle to give us back anywhere from 80 to 98% of the rum cover over the rum taxes, right? How could you not apply the same principle when the law says that whatever is manufactured here and sold into America is subject to cover over principle? I mean, come on. I mean, I think we have an on its face winnable argument.
I know, but that's illegal, but the political part is a different creature.
Correct. And they also say that it actually is to be solved by Congress because they use the ambiguity angle.
Something else that was not included. And in the Jimmy Carter administration, in which this was being debated, they told the Virgin Islands, since you're talking taxes and remittances and excise taxes, they're going to start talking status.
Oh, yes.
And this, and we found ourselves not ready for that discussion.
That's right.
Because their view is, if you want this kind of money, you want to be sovereign. And nothing, I mean sovereign, like a, like how these indigenous people have, you know, reservations, and the freely associated republics and Micronesia have their own sense of sovereignty. Well, if you demand level of money and power, let's talk about where you want to go.
Yeah.
From the
no, basically, they're saying, I want the best of both worlds.
Can that's correct.
Because we done give you a whole heap of money already.
That's correct.
You check?
Correct.
But that's really that's condescending correct. And insulting, though, Malik. Oh, gosh.
It is, yeah. But and outside, I'm going to shift it back outside. I'm going to turn it back to us. Where we are found wanting, where we are, I'm going to use a VI term, I have to translate it, tayasin, which means,
yeah, man, yeah.
Tayasin comes from the Spanish word tayasad,
yeah,
turn
yeah,
around,
yeah, yeah,
turn
yeah.
on, playing around.
Yeah.
Tayasin.
Yeah, yeah, skylarking.
Skylarking too.
Yeah.
We playing, and we have to start playing. We in the VI, when it comes to the bigger issues, we are playing, and when you start talking billion-dollar deals, you got to start accountability, responsibility,
mm-hmm.
responsiveness, maturity.
Mm-hmm. And you know what really hurt us, though, Malik? We go call a spade. There were too many instances where federal monies will be coming to the Virgin Islands and the management, and in some instances, we're going back because we weren't doing what we were supposed to do. So we were helping the anti-Virgin Islands money argument.
So I'm just being candid,
you know what I'm saying? And,
Well, never you send me a little thing about some big company court case. And when we had the power, when we have the power to lease our property, we giving away our property, and having people bill us heritage like in a survey situation, we had a power to use transferred naval property, naval based property, instead of us using to profit from the real estate. We lease it to a company that turned around and rented back to us for maybe 10 times the value. So we are showing a lack of competence, a lack of maturity. So when we say on one hand, and rightfully so, that we deserve to have our money, which I agree, we must also show that we have the responsibility to govern ourselves properly.
But Malik, what you're talking about there actually was revisited with the Diageo deal in 2008, where here we were, floating a bond for grant financing instead of building the thing and telling them you could lease it for 99, 100 years. You know what I'm saying? We literally took our money and took future monies and gave it to a company that had a market capitalization of 10 times, right, our gross territorial product. It don't make any sense. And you're right. Yeah. You know, the competence, but it ain't just about competence, sometimes it's about political will, right?
All right.
And a lot of people are afraid to say the right things and have some conviction, but it is what it is. We're going to still persevere because time has proven we are a resilient people. Quickly, before we go to the break, I want you to know that please tell my former colleague, Dr. Siku, I would like to write a book with him that highlights how the VI has led the nation in so many ways. Gwen Marie Molina has joined the chat.
Malik
Siku, so congratulations there again. We'll take a break. And we'll come back with our final segment with Malik Siku, part two of our VI history discussion. We're going to talk to the legislature after this.
Stay updated with news, alerts, and other valuable information with WTJX Newsfeed. Listen to the latest news stories that matter with Marcelina Ventura Douglas. Weekdays at 5 p.m. on WTJX 93.1, WTJX Newsfeed, your source for stories that matter.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
That dog does not want to be petted.
Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
So I spent the past year trying to figure out what news designed for 21st century humans might look like. One of the things that really stuck with me was that we now know that humans actually need hope to get up in the morning. And I don't think as a journalist I ever thought about it that way.
We're always looking for new and better ways to understand the world we live in. That's On Point with me, Meghna Chakrabarty.
Weekdays at 1 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
As the news gets more complex and changes through the day, you need more than just a quick headline check. Here and Now keeps you connected to your world between Morning Edition and All Things Considered, as the news and the people shaping it are changing in real time. I'm Robin Young. Follow along on Here and Now, NPR News weekday afternoons.
From 2 to 4 on WTJX FM, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
Hi, I'm Peter Sagal. You spent the week listening to the news. Don't you think you deserve to show off what you've learned on Wait, Wait, We Give You a Chance to Impress Your Friends with your knowledge of international incidents, political gaffes, and the latest advancement in German nudists? You'll be the life of the party or the death. Either way, you'll make an impression and you can thank Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Saturdays at 1 p.m. and Sundays at 2 p.m. right here on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
Back here, analyze this, and they say all things come to an end, and in this case, all good things come to an end. We've had, ten segments of a conversation with Malik Siku here in Black History Month. So I ain't gonna wait until we wrapping up. I want to just let you know now that I appreciate you taking some time for us. So let's have a good discussion, you know what I mean? And talk about our history, the richness of it, how we should be proud of who we are. And not only that, right? Use, and I hope that we are encouraging those who come in behind us that are going to be in leadership positions to understand that you got to learn from your mistakes and try to minimize them going forward. You're not going to be perfect. Things are going to happen. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But the goal really, right, is to make sure you don't make the same mistake more than once. And not only that, right, get the best bang for every buck that we could generate. Cause that's what, in this consumer-driven economy, Malik Siku, that's what we really need to focus on.
You never let a saying here, I don't know if you heard it before. It says, burn a child afraid of fire, which means that once a child gets touched up with a flame, they would avoid a mistake. Same as the people. We learned some hard lessons in terms of development and growth. I think all of us, all mature people, it is our responsibility and duty to make sure those who come after us avoid making the same mistakes. Make different mistakes. Because, you know, making mistakes are part of human, you know, reality, but don't make the same mistakes over and over. Then something's wrong with us. And I think one of the key challenges we have in Virgins is our inability to maximize the moment. When I go to different Caribbean islands, our neighbors tell me all the time, you don't understand why these vehicles have problems. We have U.S. citizenship, passports, all this money, all of this access. And we have potholes. They want to know how it is. What's wrong with us?
Yes,
they don't understand what's wrong with the VA. Mm-hmm. How it is we have these problems. We have so much. And I think that's part of the problem. We sometimes have too much. And we don't know how to maximize what we have. So I think we need to, you know, inculcate a higher degree of understanding and wisdom and teach our people to use what they have, mm-hmm. maximize what you have. And then by doing that, you get more. And so that if you don't have the right mentality, I don't care how many billions of dollars we see flow through here.
Correct.
If you don't have the right mindset, we're going to lose everything we have because we're not spending it wisely.
I'm going to ask you to do me a favor. Educate the public for those who, you know, for some reason believe that the legislative branch of government is responsible for a lot of executive branch functions. You know, on this Republican form of government, we got three branches, legislative, executive, judicial. And for some reason, the public, I don't know if it's because they could touch them and they can't touch governors because governors got security details, senators, all we on our own. I don't know what it is. But they like to blame them for everything. Now, I know all politics is local. And Tip O'Neill, arguably, that's one of the greatest political phrases in the history of the world. right? In particular, America. But come on now. The blaming of our legislators, our senators for literally everything is so unfair. And I know I'm a homer because I've been in the arena. But I'm just calling a spade, man. I mean, it is what it is.
You got to touch up a bit. I'm going to touch up a bit.
But my back branch, I can't deal with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I can say why this is so. The Virgin Islands is the only U.S. jurisdiction where it is a single-tier system, one level, like one-story house. Everywhere else, you have municipal government, you have a county council, you have mayors. Even in other territories, they have in Guam has district councils. We have mayors. In Samoa, you have chiefs. And Marianas. So people, there's a filtering kind of thing where you go to a local leader to deal with local issues. Mm-hmm.
Virgin Islands, I know you're going to like this local phrase. Virgin Islands is one lick, kill dick.
That's correct. That's correct. So if you're in Christensen and you got pothole, there's no mayor. Yes, you have administrator. Yes, you have administrator Samuel Sanders. Yes, you have people, you know, you could in public works, but the person you feel psychologically close to is a senator. So a senator serves as a de facto mayor or alderman or public advocate.
Okay.
Becomes all in one.
Yeah. So the lack of layers, right? Yes, what you're saying, the lack of layers, right? Gives perceptive importance, greater
that's
perceptive
correct.
Importance. I want to make sure I use
correct.
These big languages, yes. these big words, cause I'm talking to the professor. The perceptive importance that senators got to fill these gaps.
Every one of them.
Okay. No. So you're telling me don't blame the populace.
No, don't blame the people.
Don't blame populace.
People instinctively, any part of the social part, whole dead iguana, mashup system, who you gonna call? Call it senator, you call it the legislature, you call it senator Jesus, and then if you're approachable, like in your case, they expect when they call you, pick up the phone, you know.
Yes,
and
sir.
You answer them.
Yes, sir.
Show up the same
yes,
day.
Sir. Yes, sir. And you know why you need to do it? Well, it's for two reasons. Number one is the right thing to do. Right?
Yes.
Right? But number two, right? The island smile, they're going to catch up with you at some point. And the last thing you want is for them to say in a public setting, but when I call you, you ain't answer. You
that's
know what I'm
correct.
Saying? Yeah. No, you're right.
I ran into the lieutenant governor yesterday and I had to pinch him. And I don't want to call who I say he needs to contact. I told him two people to contact him. And I didn't want to select the mafia, I say, but tell the person I want to return a caller. When I call, you must answer. I call you for serious business. I ain't calling to talk about...
No, pia. Serious business.
I was in the market, right? But when the people call you, Senator, in role of Senator James, Lieutenant Governor James, Governor James, you must answer them.
Yes,
even
sir.
To tell them, no, you cannot not answer the people.
No, answer them.
Community and
answer
in
them.
This society, the vacuum of a lack of layers means that those who are in office in reality playing the 10 roles. And then who made this pasture so is that the Walter I.M. Hodges, a generation of giants emerged.
Hey, check this out. One of Walter I.M. Hodges. Son Dean, right? With Akali Bochi. I said, look, man, I listened to this name for all these years. What did IM stand for? And he tell me Ivan McDonald. You know what I'm saying? So for anybody who didn't know, they know now. It's Walter Ivan McDonald Hodge. The IM, okay. The IM is Ivan McDonald. Yeah, man. But I like that type of thing, though.
Well, our senators, they in essence, did fill that vacuum. And here in St. Thomas, there's a housing community called Oswald Harris Court.
Yeah.
And his name after Oswald Skinny, that's his nickname, Harris.
Yeah.
He was the inspiration for early athlete. He emerged in the 1930s, 40s as a councilman, a municipal councilman of the Progressive Guide Party. And he was an approachable person. You could have walk up to Skinny Harris. And come Councilman Harrison, come Skinny.
You've
asked Skinny for anything.
Wow. Well, I learned again this money. By the way, right? I got one of my godfather, right? He named Winston Foy. He live in Queens since the late 60s, he live in New York, right? So when we say housing nowadays, right, we're referring to as well Harris Court, right?
That's correct.
Because Pearson Garden is now known as the ghettos, right?
That's correct.
So you have me to, no. Housing is Pearson Garden, right? As well Harris Court is no housing, right? Yeah. You had me to know that. Yeah, so I said, I kindly beg your pardon, I want you to know that we don't call it the ghettos now. So that's what she said. Well, say, oh, yeah, I go call it what you want. I building 19 from housing. So it is what it is.
What Skinny Harris was known for, and how I learned this, my adopted mother said that Skinny Harris was known as a down-to-earth person. In fact, he was a carpenter by training. He was tall and slender. That's where he had the name Skinny from, tall and slender. Mm-hmm. And people could have gone to his office at any time or with any issue. And he was known for loving red pea soup. Now, I didn't quite understand why, but why red pea soup? That was the norm. It was his taste was the norm. He didn't like lobster and steak, you know. He loved red pea soup.
Red pea and soup. Not soup. Huh? Soup. Red pea soup.
Soup, not soup. Soup has accusion flavor. Soup is St. Thomas.
I like that one. But here's what I want to ask you, though, in the last 5 minutes. Yeah. I'm an eternal optimist. Are you an eternal optimist, number one? And number two, the prospects for the Virgin Islands getting us to 2035, next 10 years?
Anybody who is a Pan-Africanist is an infinite optimist.
Mm-hmm.
And we must believe that our people will prevail. Our people who went through slavery and won, Jim Crow and won, all forms of oppression, apartheid, and have won these battles. We have many more battles to win. It's going to take some effort, some organization, enlightenment. We have to make some important choices. Along the way, we're going to falter here and there. And we might go through a low tide or a bad spell or grab a crop. But we're going to prevail. I think for my generation, we want the prevailing to occur in our lifetime. But we don't know how life is going to be. But eventually, I see the Virgin Islands being a mecca of progress for this hemisphere. As small as we are, I see us being a place of inspiration for the rest of the Caribbean. But we have to get it right. And I think it's somewhat frustrating to see that with all we have, we let things fall out of our fingers.
Do we need any more structural change? Because you mentioned the one lake hill dick structure we got now, because we don't have municipal governments. Should that be revisited again, sir, in your opinion?
Of course. This sixth constitutional convention is really a step towards shifting the decision making of our structure to us. We have to really, as a people, look at what we have and find a way to make it more accountable, more responsive, and better organized.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the people in St. Croix are talking about redistricting, others talk about at large seats, others reapportionment. Those are potential solutions, but I think we also need to have like a layer in between. For instance, as an example, St. John needs to have its own entity to deal with local issues.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't be
requiring St. Croix inclusion in the process.
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Or St. Thomas. Even though St. John is part of the St. Thomas, St. John district,
yes.
St. John needs that isolated ability to determine who going to speak for them. I agree with that.
It's like having a multi-story house, right? And three-story house, and you rent out to your children downstairs. You don't want to have to be upstairs and tell them when to wash their hands.
I agree with that.
Let the local issues be dealt with locally.
Correct. Quickly, you're an educator. What can we do to not lose some of the children that we lose into the frailties of life here in the Virgin Islands?
Oh Lord, no.
And
no.
I know that's another hour and a half discussion, but give me a cliff notes. I know it starts with education, but where do we go from there after that?
I get a little something. Since the last time we spoke, there was a tragedy here in St. Thomas that has had people in St. Thomas in a state of shock. You can never give people too much love. We cannot love our children enough. We have to be creative and have comprehensive solutions that impact every aspect of our people's life. better education, better healthcare, intervention, mental health screening, mental health support, more spiritual development. Every aspect of life has to be revitalized. There's an infinite array of things. There's no one silver bullet to solve our problems. We got to be creative and find every conceivable thing known to humanity to save our children.
I think the one word you mentioned it, that we don't give enough attention to is intervention. Seriously, that to me, we don't feel comfortable unless we're functioning in crisis mode, right? And we need to get into more prevention, right? And intervention.
One cultural defect we have, we could understand diabetes, we can understand cancer, even COVID, everything. When it comes to issues of the mind, we don't have an understanding.
Yeah, man.
We haven't wrapped our arms around the mind, mental issues. We have to engage in intervention, therapy, counseling, best practices, the whole nine yards, and not wait until there's a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
We have to do this on an ongoing basis.
Mm-hmm.
And even those who are perfectly healthy and fine, they need therapy too.
We all need therapy. By the way, when you say whole nine yards, that's American twang, and I'm saying the whole nine yards.
I know.
Yeah, no. Whenever somebody speaks, I always like to look for the local equivalent, right? You know what they say, right? That's just the kata, right?
The bundle coming.
I want to thank you for bringing historical bundle, right?
Yes.
To analyze this twice during this VI History Month, Professor Malik Siku, thank you very much on behalf of my audience, and I appreciate you. And I'm looking forward to talking with you again. We'll find a reason to bring you on again down the road if it's okay with you.
I appreciate it. Once I know in advance, I'll try to be there.
Without a doubt. Thank you very much, sir. I appreciate that. Ladies and gentlemen, Malik Siku, we had two conversations. The first one was on March 14th, and then we had the second one today, and we talk about how we live in locally. I want to thank the delegate, the Congresswoman Stacey Plaskett, for joining us earlier, and then I had a little co-host in there with Malik before we got into our conversation. I want to thank the audience for the great text messages that we're now going on. By the way, write down this number because you're going to be able to text me during the show. I don't got another phone I'm using. 340-690-7299. We're going to be using that for text messages on Thursday because we're going to be on location at Kramer's Park. Okay? Get a pen and paper. I'm going to say that again. 340-690-7299. I'm going to repeat it all day tomorrow so you can text me during our on-location edition of Analyze This up at Kramer's Park on Thursday. Be good and be safe. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect those of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.
He said that black smoke was constantly coming out of the burn pits 24/7. And my reaction to it was like, wow, that doesn't sound very safe. I wonder what that's about. And in my mind, I couldn't imagine at the time that type of system operating could potentially harm our service members.
Journalism that seeks and reveals. That's On Point with me, Meghna Chakrabarty.
Weekdays at 1 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
Morning Edition takes you across this country and around the world with stories that keep you informed and the context to understand what matters. The news comes at you quickly, but we slow it down to examine each story from different angles and give perspective on what might happen next. A brand new day comes with new possibilities and a new edition of Morning Edition from NPR News.
Morning Edition, weekdays at 5 a.m. to 8 a.m. on WTJX FM 93.1.